Hello and welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 78 for the week of May 19th, 2010. Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Abor.
I'm Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And today we are jumping through the space-time slip once again.
We finished the fight.
We did finish the fight. We completed Halo 3, finally. Mm-hmm. As some of you know, we've been playing through the franchise for quite some time now.
Yeah.
We did a Halo podcast covering the first two Halos.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like eons ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finally just beat the third one.
Yep.
We've destroyed some Halos and mm-hmm. killed some monsters, and we're here to talk about it.
Yeah.
Normally what we do when we talk about specific games is tell you that we'll be talking about the mechanics for so long, and then we're just going to jump into spoilers. But we're just going to cut all that crap out. If you haven't played Halo 3 by now, you're probably never going to play it. And yeah. The story is probably not all that important if you get it spoiled for you.
Yeah, I mean, it came out a few years ago now, and to be honest, knowing a lot of the story doesn't necessarily impact your enjoyment of the game all that much, seeing as how I kind of knew the story as I was playing it.
Absolutely. But you, if you are one of those super, super sensitive people... Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah.
Be warned that we're going to be spoiling the game completely right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah. At least for the next 15 minutes completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. All right, so jumping on in, where should we start with the story?
Well, we can start... Why don't we just start where we left off, right?
Okay.
Halo 2 ended mm-hmm. with the Master Chief learning that there was actually tons more rings.
Yeah.
And
Cortana was captured by the zombie king.
The Zombie King, the Little Shop of Horrors plant.
Yes.
So when you came in, were you excited about Halo 3 for the story at all?
I mean, it's always nice to pick something up, especially when it's such a blatant cliffhanger for the second one. And I actually remember that. I never played the second one when it first came out, but I did hear from other people saying, "Oh my god, what a tease! Why'd they do that?" And I knew I was in for something like that after I finished the second one.
Yeah.
Plus, like going into it, I had already lived through the hype machine that was around Halo 3 and like finished the fight. Like, you know, you had literally left off in the middle of the fight.
Yeah.
And Halo 3 was about jumping right back into the action. So I expected it to be hectic and firefight-esque right at the very beginning, which, you know, it kind of was.
Yeah.
No more or less than other Halos, I would say, but it got me primed to think that this would be a very action-oriented Halo.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think last time we talked, we had an opportunity to discuss some of the trailers for Halo 3.
Yeah.
And again, just to go back to that topic in general, I got really excited about Halo 3, even after we were playing it. Especially some of the allusions to Cortana.
Yeah.
And she's a much larger character in the third Halo.
I think that this is, like, overall, out of everything in Halo's story, I think the most interesting thing is how it was marketed. Because I feel like there's this huge disconnect between the marketing and extended universe of Halo and what happens in the game. Like, and those trailers of Halo 3 were heavy. I mean, they were talking with like war veterans of the Covenant War and saying, you know, where were you when this happened? And like they showed people like getting kind of choked up thinking about the war and really serious stuff. Like, and that called into our minds other imagery of previous wars, of real wars that we've seen, which is, you know, almost unheard of in video games. I mean, there's very few video games that take on even allusions to real world issues.
Yeah.
And it's weird to see something like as huge as Halo do it.
I felt like some of that did carry through into the game though. Just a little bit. The first half of Halo 3, when you're actually fighting alongside some other Marines, I think the marketing campaign, at least it felt present in my mind while I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
That it was something that Chief was fulfilling this role that was destined for him.
But I felt like the Marines weren't had none of the gravity that they showed in the trailers.
Oh yeah,
it was like David Cross and Nathan Fillion go, "Yeehaw, I'm gonna shoot some people." And in the trailers, it was like, "That was when the Master Chief armed his grenade," and it's like, "Here's David Cross being a jackass in the game." Like,
well, did you feel like there was any that they succeeded at all in portraying drama?
Not really. I have no idea why Cortana and Master Chief have any kind of relationship. Like, I have no idea why anyone cares about Cortana. She's not a human, or she's not a being.
Here goes your xenophobia again.
And this is not coming from someone who's ignorant of sci-fi and, like, the issues surrounding artificial intelligence. Like, they never did anything to kind of problematize whether Cortana or not is an actual being. Like, it was always kind of assumed that for some reason people cared about her and it was sad when she was in trouble, but, like, I never really understood why.
Well, I mean, I think we're supposed to presume that Cortana is a
sentient?
Essentially. I mean, at the very end of Halo 3, she tells Master Chief that she's gonna miss him.
Yeah.
And there's all this throughout the game, there are moments when time has slowed down, and you see images of Cortana.
Yeah.
And she's telling you, you know, I picked you, I selected you out of so many others.
Yeah.
And all of this weird, like, there were scenes of, it almost seemed like she was being violated.
Yeah.
By
completely. It was she's basically their version of Madison Page. I mean, like, she's set up to get in trouble all the time. But I don't see what she sees in Master Chief. Like, why is their relationship meaningful at all?
I don't know, but I think that's part of the mystery of it. Like, to me, at least, I found it appealing. Yeah. That, you know, we never see the Master Chief's helmet. That's never a thing.
Yeah.
But Cortana knows who the Master Chief is.
Yeah.
None of us do.
Yeah.
And none of the soldiers do. So I felt like, at the very least, there's a level of intimacy there that I buy, and that she knows his real identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the very end of Halo 3, again, she says she thinks him and calls him out by name.
Yeah.
Calls him John.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, it is. They definitely have some sort of relationship. I just don't feel like the players are given any reason to care about it.
Sure, and I think that's a fault of the entire series. It's way more action-packed, and it doesn't aim really high for the story most of the time.
But the outside lore is so much more rich. You know, like, the outside lore, like, thinking about those trailers right now kind of gives me goosebumps as to, like, how serious they were and how human they were in many respects. And then that doesn't... It seems to stand so starkly against what you see in the game.
But I don't think it's incompatible. Yeah. Like, I think that what they desire is to plant the seed in your head of a narrative that exists within a wider world, and freeing themselves of world building. Essentially, they don't have to show a lot of flesh of the world in the game itself, because they're presuming we've seen the marketing campaign, maybe we've read the novels, and then there are various allusions throughout the game, you know, some of the conflict between the elites and the prophets.
I thought that was a far more compelling storyline, really, because, I mean, it's, again, it gives us reasons to care. I mean, we're looking at a society run by the prophets that is corrupt, but they're still controlled by these prophets, and so you understand why people might want to fight against that. You also understand why people might want to fight to perpetuate that, because they're already ensconced in power and they want to maintain the status quo. The Arbiter, for me, is the most interesting character in the entire game, because he's the one that makes the big decision.
Yeah.
You know, Master Chief never has to make a big moral decision. Like, it's the Arbiter that has to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know. I do admire the broad, like, the Halo extended universe. And I think it's cool that they were able to do something with that, starting with literally a faceless character. I think it's impressive as how much lore they built up around it.
I mean, do you think it's a result of them not realizing exactly how massive this game would become after the first one?
Completely. I mean, who could have even thought? I mean, Halo continues to define how we think of big blockbuster action games, even in the era of Call of Duty. If it's anything besides, if it's anything in sci-fi, it's immediately compared to Halo.
Yeah.
And you know, you never know when you're going to strike gold like that. You know, you have a solid foundation, but you never know when people are going to get obsessed with your extended universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. The biggest problem I had is, and I'll use a Star Wars analogy.
Oh, please do.
So Episode 4 is a good movie because if you knew nothing about the extended universe, you still could enjoy it for all the same reasons that people who knew about the extended universe could enjoy it. You know who the bad guy is. You know what motivates them. You know who the good guys are. You know what motivates them. It's implied that there's a larger, grand story going on, but you can kind of grasp it just by even the way that the ships are designed. You know, the huge Empire ships versus the ragtag kind of duct tape together little ships.
There's a life to it.
And also, it doesn't assume that you've seen anything else besides episode 4. Now, when you go back to episodes 1, 2, and 3, the prequels, they're terrible. And one of the reasons is you have no reason to care about any of these people.
Right.
And once you start reading the extra books and you start reading and watching the Clone Wars and reading all the graphic novels, then all of a sudden Boba Fett becomes a more sympathetic character and you see what the internal monologues of Obi-Wan and
right.
But if you're just watching the movies, you don't get any of that. And that's what I feel happened with Halo 3. Like, it was really powerful for me, but it's because I already went in primed.
I think they know that. I think that's partly why they tried to stress the Cortana tidbits.
Because
they're trying to humanize the Master Chief and tell a story that's on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, the story of the third Halo is essentially the same as the first.
Yeah.
You're trying to stop the rings from being exploded by these crazy prophets, and there's also a third party involved that you're always fighting.
Mm-hmm.
The entire story is rehashed again.
I like that, though. I mean, Halo, and we'll get into gameplay in a second, Halo, even thematically, is circular. Like, everything in Halo is a circle.
Right, but that can get tedious.
Yeah.
And because they know that it's going to be tedious, I think they try to stress the more, you know, lovable aspects of the Chief.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. And it doesn't hurt that they also had, some more time and some more hardware to work with, I think. Because I felt like Halo 2 was buckling the Xbox, was really straining it. And also, I had read some things about Halo 2, and Bungie were saying that they felt rushed and they felt like they didn't do things quite right in Halo 2, even though it's like one of the most popular games of all time.
Absolutely.
And I can kind of see what they meant after playing Halo 3.
Mm-hmm.
I do admire the story for what it is. I just,
Well, so what were your thoughts on the deaths in the game? So two characters die.
Oh, yeah.
One is Johnson, the happy-go-lucky, I'm too old for this shit
fellow. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was kind of sad, I guess.
And then what's the...
Oh, the other sergeant. Keyes?
Yeah, Sergeant Keyes.
Keyes.
Played by Julie Benz, I believe.
I mean, who are they?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I mean. Like, this is the big problem. Like, you have these hugely dramatic things. You know, she's tragically shot in the back by someone, and it's like, okay, oh no, that's terrible. But it's only terrible because she's a human, and the person that shot her is an alien. Like, I don't really know anything about her because I never read any of the books,
Yeah.
I just feel like the game storytelling, as far as a plot goes, is not really that great. Like, I never quite know exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing in Halo.
True, yeah. And
like,
especially
why am I pressing this switch? What is this door? Like,
and the games, I think, in terms of space, have gotten progressively worse from the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, I'm on a Halo. Yeah. I know what it's going to do. I'm headed to blow it up.
Yeah.
And by the time you get in the third one, there's a weird thing that's not... It's not actually a Halo. It's more like an onion blossom.
Yeah, it's like a scaffold.
Yeah. It's bizarre. Yeah, and I don't really know why that's the case. I'm sure it's there. Maybe there's little tidbits of it, but...
It's just not communicated very clearly exactly why you're doing it and where you are at any given point. It feels like you're in a neat arena that is well-suited to the combat. It just doesn't feel like... it's one of my favorite words to use in posts. It's not diegetic, Like, I don't feel like the places are actually lived in. I feel like they're just kind of there to flip switches and so forth. And then something happens, and then I go to the next arena.
Hmm.
But, I think that probably leads into talking about the game systems itself, because they are set up to be Halo.
Right.
And I think Halo 3 is great. I mean, what do you think? Like, from 1 to 2 to 3, what's your favorite Halo system?
Halo 3, absolutely, yeah. And the jump between the second and the third was huge, at least in my opinion. Definitely larger than the jump from first to second.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed some of the control schemes, which were a little... and they did it again most recently with Halo Reach, and it's a little distracting at first.
Yeah. I'm sure if we monkeyed around a little bit in the options...
We could switch it back.
But the problem is that... you know, this is a problem of default, like, and this is a problem that's worldwide. Like, people don't contribute to their retirement plans because it's not default set up to do it. And so people don't mess with their controls in games a lot of the times because they just go with the default. And so when you change something from the default, it's like a big deal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people aren't going to do it, even seasoned gamers like us.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many times where I was pressing the X button because I thought it would reload and then I'd throw a grenade or something. It's like, that is not what I meant.
So, which brings us to one of the biggest new additions, which is specialty equipment.
Yeah.
Which you can throw with the X button.
Mm-hmm.
These include a lift, like a boost lift.
Yeah.
A shield, like a round dome.
Yeah. But then there's that other shield, right? That is a purple one.
Yeah, there's like
it's like a blast shield.
Yeah, the Covenant often used it in the second game.
Yeah.
There's one of those shields. Yeah. There's one that makes a bunch of little red dots appear in the screen, which is much more helpful for multiplayer matches.
Mm-hmm.
There's some blue ones. There's a lot. There's a bunch. What did you think of those as an addition?
Yeah. The problem is with the campaign that there's no tutorial. And so the whole time I was probably annoying you by like, oh God, what's the triangle thing? What's the triangle thing? Then I press X. No, don't throw that there. Yeah. Like,
well, the symbols don't really display what it does very well.
Yeah. It would have been nice, and this is really hard to do in a game like Halo, but it would have been nice to have some kind of primer on what these things actually do.
Yeah.
Because I just pick them up and I have no idea if this is a defensive thing or an offensive thing. The game is so hectic that it's hard to study the symbols while someone is shooting you in the ass and like figuring out what it is.
Well, and learn the efficacy of them.
Yes.
You know, like there were a lot of times when I would just throw something out no matter what it was. And I don't really know how effective it is because I'm in bullet hell and I'm trying to get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So like, for example, there's one that will slowly give you back health.
Yeah.
I know that if the enemies were using it, that was probably bad.
Yeah.
I know that when I used it, I guess I lived a little bit longer, but I couldn't learn when is the opportune time to use
this. There's not a good feedback system. You can sometimes use it and you're not quite sure if it was effective or not. It would have been nice to be trained in that a little bit more. I feel like it's basically a trial by fire thing. Like, you learn about it by doing multiplayer maybe and then go back into it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I still think some of it was really cool.
Oh yeah.
Especially the large spear shield.
Yeah.
Excellent. And that saved our asses countless times.
Well, plus then it kind of taunts enemies. Like, do you stay outside of the shield or do you run in and risk a melee, or do you wait and let them gain their health back while you kind of reset? All of that I think is good. Halo 2 kind of annoyed me by how much of a premium they put on dual wielding. I felt like that kind of needlessly complicated things.
Yeah.
And I feel like those equipment things actually cut back on how effective dual wielding was, because you wanted to know that you had a free hand to do something with. And if you're dual wielding, you're kind of focusing on two sets of ammo and you're not really thinking about your equipment. So I think it kind of was a nice balance to cut down on, like, always dual-wielding things.
Yeah, and I think they actually weakened some of the dual-wielding efficacy.
Yeah. And also, I don't really even know how to measure this, but I feel like they increased the melee strength a little bit more in Halo 3, or at least made it a little bit more effective against the enemies. Yeah. I feel in Halo 2... again, it was just more of a shooter rather than a like shoot slash brawl. And then in Halo 3, I felt like I was using melee a little bit more.
Well, I think that's one of the brilliant things that Bungie is so good at, and that's just fine-tuning some of their smaller mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
At GDC, they had a talk about changing the reload time on a sniper rifle from 0.5 seconds to like 0.65 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's a huge deal. And I think you really felt that in the games. Things were just tightened up from 2 to 3.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even though it was weird having those new objects in the game, they still put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah. And I can tell, like, tactically why they're in there. And I support that, because I think that the beauty of Halo 1 is that you only have two weapons at any one time, but your third weapon is your fists. And so, which was unlike most other first-person shooters at the time. It started this really neat way of playing, which is kind of dueling. You're circling around each other looking for a mistake that you can kind of leap in really quick and do a melee.
It's like a romantic Spanish movie or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you are waiting for a mistake, kind of like fencing or something.
And in multiplayer, definitely, when it's one-on-one.
Yeah, and you don't want to get too close, and you might soften people up with bullets, but you can't shoot that accurately if someone's actually weaving in and out. Which brings up another good thing that I always liked about all three Halo games is the AI is just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even the Halo 1 AI, like, it stands up today, I think. It's better than a lot of shooters that I've played. And that's all I can say about it. I mean, they take cover, like, they're kind of devious. Like,
they cooperate. It almost seems that they try to flank you.
Yeah.
It seems.
They're just really, really intelligent seeming. And I think that makes the game a lot more dynamic, because you're never just kind of going in a hallway. And of course, because there are really no hallways, even if there are hallways in Halo, everything is set up spherically, like in a circle, you know, like, again, the circle thing comes back. Like, you have to go through an arena and there's cover spursed throughout, so it, you know, keeps you moving. You're not just camping.
Yeah. And I think there's something special about playing it cooperative too.
Yeah.
Because there are times when we would try to outwit the AI, knowing, okay, they're smart, they're going to be doing a certain thing.
Yeah.
Let's try to flank them.
Yeah.
Or situations where it was the opposite, where, you know, we were being flanked and mm-hmm. we couldn't separate anymore because the AI was just too intelligent for that.
And also the fact that you respawn and we kind of, okay, we died two times in a row on this thing. We should not go to the left this time.
Yeah.
Like we need to take an actual look at the strategy we're using and think about a different way of doing it,
yeah.
Which is pretty rare, I think, especially if you're playing against bots.
Yeah, for a lot of shooters, certainly.
Yeah.
And there was a lot more thinking about the layout of the map and the layout of the cover.
Yeah, there's just so many. Halo is one of those linear games that is, you know, has defined start and end points. You know, you start at point A, you end at point B, but the way you get there is so personalized for each player.
Yeah, it's really wide play space.
Yeah. I mean, at the end when we were driving the warthogs to escape from the exploding wherever we were, there was the point where we were driving, and I just got obsessed with hitting ramps. At a certain point, you're like, Scott, where are you? Where are you? And I was like in the air as you were saying that. I was landing on top of your warthog.
Oh, that was epic. Yeah, that was awesome.
And you can't script that kind of stuff. Yeah, you know, like that stuff was just kind of, you just happened to be driving on a certain route, and I just happened to be jumping off the route that was parallel to it, just above, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, it's a uniquely Halo thing. You can't really do that kind of stuff in Call of Duty because they're so tightly scripted sequences.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Which I think is also, you know, before we end, I made sure to subject myself to a little bit of the multiplayer as well this afternoon.
Yeah, so what were your thoughts on the multiplayer?
You know what? I was honestly surprised as to how well we did. I was, you know, not to toot our own horns or anything, but we dominated a couple matches.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, when you think of Halo Online, you think of people who are very, very good.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of people playing Halo 3.
There were some matches where I mean, there were some people that were clearly outclassing me.
Yeah. But, you know, I actually think that the game does a pretty good job of making it balanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a lot of, I don't feel that when you get one item, for example, the person owns. I remember playing Halo 2 multiplayer, and it felt like whenever someone had a sword, game over.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just way too hard to counter that.
Mm-hmm.
In Halo 3, not only are a lot of the maps changed
mm-hmm.
to where you can't really have the type of advantage with a sword,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they've opened some of them up.
Yeah.
Or added, like, boosts and really quick escapes.
Yeah.
Or even stronger weapons and more ranged weapons. It's just, the multiplayer level design itself is superb.
And the way that level design facilitates emergent stories. I mean, there was, you know, when we were playing, I forget what the mode is called, but it's basically a person is the flag and you have to get them to the base. And so you have to escort them to the base to win a point.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't even really know what was going on at first until we clued into the fact that one of us was the magic key. And so the other person escorts the person in a, you know, motorcycle or whatever. And there's just so many times where you take a wrong turn or you flip over a few times and it's something you just can't script.
Yeah. Like you fly in the air and then, but you still safely land.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it brings up all these times. Oh, remember that one time we did this? That was amazing. Like, and it's those types of stories that I think are even more important than, the main game, like story of Master Chief type thing.
Yeah.
Because you could easily play Halo for years with like one kind of character or persona and build up a legend around yourself,
yeah.
you know, within a small group of people.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny that we were already experiencing those moments in even just a very short while online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it helps that, you know, I mean, again, Bungie still does a great job of like doing a party system and making it really seamless to go from game to game. There is almost no lag for us in terms of like finding players,
right?
And creating parties in order to get in there.
So, I mean, it seems like we're kissing a lot of ass here.
Yeah.
Are there any major complaints that you have with the game?
Well, I mean, I think...
Besides the story?
Yeah, besides the story, I think that... I think that they... Honestly, I think it's overly complicated. Like, I think the beauty of Halo is, like, simplicity and using the very limited dynamics within... environments rather than with tools.
But I think one of the reasons your explanation of like emergent gameplay, I think part of it was they were thinking, let's just add more stuff.
Yeah.
And it'll create more moments like that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they added the ability to grab turrets and then lift them off.
Yeah.
Slowing
yeah.
your movement but giving you a huge fucking gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's kind of silly. Most of the time it's actually not all that effective either.
Because you'll get slowed down.
You'll get
yeah.
slowed down.
I mean, I still think Halo 1 is my favorite.
Really?
Like, I think that it was, no matter how repetitive it was, I knew what I was
and
getting.
And it was.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you go into so many different hallways and arenas that are basically just mirrors of the other side of the building that you were just in. But I still think that the core sequence of Halo, which is find an enemy, start circling, shoot, try to go in for a kill, and then back out again, is most clearly defined in Halo 1. And that... You know, it's okay to add things onto that, but I still think I enjoyed the simplicity of one the most. The other thing that I never really enjoyed all that much was, I think that the, like, I like the vehicles okay. They're always kind of floaty.
Yeah.
But that, I think that's just the feel of the game. Halo itself is a floaty game.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like, you're jumping, like, three persons' height, and yeah. and so... That is what it is. I can't really slight them for that because it still fits with yeah. the overall game.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about you?
I do agree with you on the complications, especially in regards to some of the special equipment.
Mm-hmm.
They added two new grenades.
Yeah.
One being the flame grenade, which yeah. I don't even know if... I only got to use it twice. It's very rare in the game.
Yeah, same here.
And that was a little disappointing because it's kind of a cool little yeah. trick. They added flamethrowers, mm-hmm. which are a new weapon. You know, that was really cool.
I forgot. Sorry. I was thinking about it when you were thinking of grenades. They pile too much stuff onto the right bumper. So the right bumper is reload, use an item, and get into a vehicle. And I don't think it should be like that.
Right.
Because there's just so many different buttons that you could use, or even a whole D-pad that only gets used for a flashlight.
Oh, but to be fair, the D-pad on the 360 controller is not.
Yeah, but I mean, they could have mapped it to like left, down, and right. To all do the same thing, so you just mash it.
Right.
There was a lot of times, and this is in general, I feel like it's hard to pick weapons up in Halo.
Yeah, because you generally have to look at it instead of just going over it.
Yeah, and even if you do go, I mean, you can go over it, but it only shows you where the weapon is in the upper right-hand corner, and so it's very easy to miss.
Oh, and it's hell when multiple guns are in the same area, yeah. you end up accidentally picking one
up.
It's
like, I didn't want this stupid needler, I wanted right. the bazooka.
Exactly. And you're like, when you're in mid-combat, it gets really tough. You know, you need to pick up that bazooka and kill, yeah. you know, 30 guys around you.
And, I mean, that's just a function of having to do so many different things in a hectic situation. And so I'm now interested to continue playing the Halo series and see what they, because it feels like they're going to keep tweaking the controls from what I've heard people say, including yourself, about Reach and ODST. It feels like they still tweak how the default setup works. And yeah. I'm interested to kind of keep using the default setup just like in a scientific sense, just to see how they do it.
Yeah, I'm still actually using Halo 3's control scheme while playing Halo Reach.
Right now. Okay.
And
you had to set that. Back
I did. To, I set it yeah. back after I played for a little while.
Yeah.
But that brings us to an important point. Are you excited about the franchise? Do you think that there's a lot of vitality still left in it?
Mm.
You know, when Halo 3 was done, theoretically, it could have been a while until the franchise got booted up again.
Yeah.
That's not the case. I mean, they came out with Halo Wars. They've got ODST. They have mm-hmm. Halo Reach coming out shortly.
Yeah.
Do you think that you need more Halo? Do you need more Master Chief?
I mean, we're not going to get any more Master Chief. I mean, well, maybe we will, but...
Well, I mean, Bungie just signed a 10-year deal with Activision.
For a new IP.
Yeah, for a new IP, but, you know.
They're not, I mean, and Microsoft still has Halo.
Right.
They are
they're holding on to that staunchly.
Microsoft is the zombie king with its tendrils around around Halo. I think it's neat. The thing is, I don't know if I care so much about them. I feel like they're just releasing Halos now to release new multiplayer things.
Right.
Which is cool and everything. But, you know, Halo 3, the multiplayer seems so varied and so many different things you can do with it. I don't see myself utilizing the other Halos enough. You know, right. The minute I get good at Halo 3, they'll just release ODST and then I kind of have to start over again.
Right, right.
And you know, you know how I feel about prequels. I hate prequels. I think they're the dumbest thing you can do. Yeah. And Halo Reach is a prequel. Like, you know, there's going to be technology in Halo Reach that
is not
should
consistent.
Have been in Halo 1, like chronologically and historically speaking, but it won't show up.
Yeah.
And that will bug me to no end.
Yeah.
I'll still play the game, though.
Yeah, of course, of course. Well, what about Bungie? Do you think that they kind of just stepped onto a lucky thing? Or
I feel like they have a good sense of how a game should be designed, you know, mechanically.
Yeah.
I do worry about, like, they have this 10-year contract, and it seems like Activision's going to give them pretty much free reign. I feel like sometimes great art is... great art rises from...
restrictions?
Yeah, constraints and restrictions. And so what they had to do in order to get Halo off the ground is, like, really struggle, and, you know, they're trying to figure out a better way to do first-person shooters on consoles, and they had to do all this innovation. And now they have, like, 10 years to do whatever they want. And they can design the story that they want to design.
Epic as they want to.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? That's not always a good thing. Again, like Exhibit A, Star Wars Episodes 1, 2, and 3, when a creator gets free reign to do whatever they want, not always a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd actually be really interesting to see Bungie kind of tone it down a bit and go for a smaller scale. I think they were trying to do that a little bit with ODST. Mm-hmm. I haven't played it, so we'll see when we get around to it.
Yeah.
You know, even the Master Chief. I could see the Master Chief coming back in another game where, you know, there's not Covenant. Maybe there's not even other Marines. Maybe he just lands on a planet and is helping some Aborigines take care of their business. I don't know.
Just continue on the colonialism thing.
I don't think that Epic and Halo have to be go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what we understand of an Epic first-person shooter comes from Halo.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not doesn't have to be the case. I think that their systems are
strong. I feel like
strong.
It's pretty... I mean, especially Halo 3, there were some really neat sequences, like when we were fighting the crab walkers in airplanes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really impressive because I knew that I could get close to those crab things and then be inside of them.
Right.
But I could also be, no load screens, no nothing, I could also be shooting at them from like a mile away.
True. That's cool. But I guess maybe what I mean more than a story, epic story, not necessarily, you know.
A very localized thing.
Yeah. I mean, you could still have a large scale environment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what, I'll play it because I'd be interested to see what they do with this now that they're not tied to the franchise anymore.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, like you said, they know how to make a good system. So whatever they do make, I feel like it'll be solid.
Yeah.
I'm more interested to see what happens with Halo because it feels like they're just kind of leaving it to Microsoft. And who knows what will happen with it.
I mean, it'll probably be choked until there's every last morsel of money in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I would. I mean, Christ.
Yeah. What are you going to do? I mean, like, it's people will continue to play it.
Absolutely.
All right. So is that it?
I think that's it. I mean, we're coming back to the universe. We're going to move on to ODST eventually. Mm-hmm. Halo Reach is going to come out soon enough. So
that's true. And so we will be back again. The circular thing.
Yeah.
You always come back. We will always circle back around to another Halo podcast.
Until we're 80. Yeah.
All right, so if you folks want to write in with your experiences with Halo, where you think the franchise might go next, where you think Bungie might go next, feel free to write in. Our email address is experiencepoints@gmail.com.
You can also leave your comments in the comment section to this podcast episode, as well as any of our posts. We update the website Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings. The site is experiencepoints.blogspot.com. Come back, check us out often, and let your friends know.
All right, till next time. Wake us when you need us.